This week on RSVNB Update, it's a patch week dancing around the balancing issues of Ripper Demons, billions of GP for 75 rune score, and new dialogue from our friends on the Glacier Front. We also dig deep into what quests a RuneScape tabletop game would include and what it would look like. This is RSVNB Update, episode 866, recorded Thursday, January 27th, 2022. Ring Around the Ripper. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSVNB Update. Tanis, I thought we were having a quiet week this week. Didn't it seem like a bit of a quiet week?
All I heard was crickets.
Yeah, and I thought that's what I was going to hear. That's what you're trying to imply when you were just taking a moment to respond there. So well done, well done. But nonetheless, of course, patch week here at RSVNB Update, and joining us to go through some of the patches is Thaxi. Welcome back.
Hello.
Who you have heard many times before now. He's known as the guy who likes to do math and helps us with combat and PVM things. Welcome back.
Hello. It's good to be back.
Yes. So, bit of a quiet patch week this week. So if you want to follow along with us, full show notes are available at update.rsbnb.com. You can join the Discord at rsbnb.com/discord, or the friends chat is bitsbytes. But we have patch notes this week that we've been waiting for in some cases, and some that have been ruffling the feathers of the community. And Tanis, I'm going to be really interested to hear what you have to say about some of these as we move through them, just with your very unique perspective on them and some of the things we talked about.
Feathers have been ruffled?
Yeah.
In the RuneScape community?
Yeah, even on a patch
that
week.
That don't sound right.
Gasp! Okay. Where was I? Patch week. Yes. Het's Oasis? Let's start with Het's Oasis, because I think that's something we should definitely talk about, because all of the tablets of Het that were in-game have now crumbled to dust. Kind of weird they persisted for an extra week, but lo and behold, they crumbled to dust. apparently, and this is something that was known with the Tablet of Het, is that if you actually started an Archglacier killstreak with the Tablet of Het and have not claimed loot, you are still getting those benefits until you end that streak.
Right. Yeah, they said that it was applied at streak start on your first kill. There was the check for it when they were going through it. So that was known. That was in the news post. Yeah. I think that was intentional.
Yeah, that's just a fun little thing to mention here as we move through these ones. But now we move on to the ones that I'm really excited about. The Volcanic Trapper outfit will now double loot when you're doing scarab hunting in Het's Oasis. And the outfit can now also offer you a teleport to the Het's Oasis scarab pools. Which, when you think about it, these things probably should have been on there before, but, I mean, it's always nice to have this as for the full benefit of that outfit, because, well, we know initially, in the first couple of weeks, how expensive a lot of the powders and scarab shells were from the Oasis. So this is a nice quality of life fix, and I wish this was in place when I did my 5,000.
Right. I mean, it just makes them farmable, right?
Yeah.
Which, having them be automatically picked up is just, it's so
nice. Oh, we're not there yet. That's the best one.
Well, you got me started on things that are better about this for people who are doing their big kill count.
Yeah.
Go on, then.
Have you started yet?
Done about 1,500 total between accounts.
All right. The collector's insignia now works on the agility course. I think that's the thing that prevents you from failing a bit, right? If you don't have the agility.
No, it actually, it gives you 5% additional experience. When charged, it gives you 10% additional experience.
Oh.
On every agility course in the game.
Okay. Moving on.
Nobody has those pocket slots. So.
No. the Say It, Don't Spray It achievement requirements have been updated so that it now works with a fully upgraded cramulet. And this is the achievement when you ask the camel in Alcarid to tell you a story. In that previously it was a little bit unclear as to whether or not you needed the full one, but the description has been updated that yes, now you need the full cramulet. for that. And this was in place in game since the Oasis came out, but they just clarified the text requirement on it this week.
Oh, Earth will be happy to know.
Well, no, I mean, it's an achievement. And, you know, maybe that's something that should have been said when you enter the Oasis, or maybe there should have been a sign or something, because we had him on the show. For anybody who hasn't listened to this episode in Youth Axie, Earth said, "I'm supposed to talk to a crocodile?"
Well, there's a quest item. I know it was from a quest that had a lot going on, but there's a quest item for this.
Yeah, an amulet of croc speak. It's hard to forget, or sorry, it's easy to forget about, rather. Anyways.
I mean, it came from a penguin quest, which was situated in the desert, back including a lot of references to things that, yes, back to the freezer, that weren't...
The Doctor Who quest.
Correct. Yeah.
And finally, Dundee's crocodile upgrades now offers automatic looting for 2,500 scarabs caught. And if you've already got the achievement unlocked, this upgrade will be unlocked automatically.
Woo! Yay! Woo!
This feels like a fully fleshed out training method now, I have to say.
Yeah, they fixed a lot of the gripes people had. I mean, and it also feels like a supply method for those powders, which to be useful, because picking up the shells was the biggest pain of collecting that powder before anyways.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, this is one of those things that made this content better, but I feel like the powders, it took away one of the last like remnants of the house that and that still hurts. That still hurts a little bit.
Well, no, the house is 350. These are 250, right?
No. These add 250, so they do the same as us, I think, is my understanding of it.
I mean, it just kills the altar, you know.
Yeah, I believe the altar friends chat that ran hosting for houses is stopped running on RuneScape since the update. It's still running on old school, but I believe it stopped running in RS3.
But times have to change. I would tell anyone else that just because this one's my baby. And, you know.
Rest in peace.
Construction is talking about skills that need reworks. Is one that, you know, is not doing super hot right now.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. And you did this before Christmas on your alt. And I remember the stories you were telling me about all the interesting characters you had wandered through.
So I hosted, for folks that haven't heard this story, I hosted an altar in the Altar Friends chat and their Discord and the whole nine yards. While I was training my alt's prayer, I said, I'll just open up the main. I had my main on lighting burners with a 2-minute timer going on loop on mobile. And I had my alt account running back and forth to the bank to do prayer training. And that is no longer a thing that people do. Which really, player owned house is now pet storage and item storage.
Perhaps I should have a better look at the construction segment on the monthly bit we're building then.
Maybe.
Bit of a preview for everyone later on. Kill count, death count, and streak from the dual arena now carry over to the dual anywhere duelist's hat, which is something people wanted on launch, and it was just a question of merging them, so that happened, which is good. Crocs will now occasionally resurface to form a shortcut as part of the Hetz Oasis agility course.
Yeah.
I think that's an interesting mechanic. It kind of brings that in from the Heffin agility course.
Yeah, and they snuck in. We're going to talk about achievements a few times in this episode, but they snuck in a skilling achievement in agility. Or not in agility. Where did they stick that? They stuck it in one of them. Maybe exploration. Exploration. Okay. Under Hetz Oasis, they added an achievement. I think it's just 5 rune score. Unlicensed chiropractor jump across a crocodile's back. But they didn't tell anybody they were adding it. I don't think it's in the patch notes.
And it's obviously not something for comp, so I don't think it's something you need to mention that was added.
It's just a fun addition.
Yeah, and it would be a subpoint under this patch note. The master farming cape will now automatically super compost the flower bushes. Fertile soil can also now be used to super compost the flower bushes, and rapid growth and supreme growth leafy potions will now work with flower bushes and Het's Oasis.
The farming cape and fertile soil were both things I tried on release weekend. Was sad, didn't work. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Yay!
And that definitely would have helped me in the flowers that I had to gather. And I heard a huge sigh of relief from you, Tannis.
You know.
Less clicks on mobile.
Less clicks on mobile.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Moving on to more general fixes this week. The Pterosaur Maul's effect will no longer boost abilities applied with Greater Barge if the player is not wielding the weapon. And this has the subheading reapplied fix.
Yep.
So apparently it didn't work the first time they put that in. Which is weird. Okay. Added map blocking to the Ripper Demon Cave to prevent players from negating their attacks using a combat dummy.
Yeah.
You gonna explain this, Shane?
Yeah, so basically what was happening with this is that there was a certain part of the Ripper Cave where if you put down a combat dummy, you could effectively AFK there safely, either by using magic or using the magic cannon and farm Ripper Demon kills. So as a result of this, it would make it so that they didn't do their special attack, which is the one-hit KO that we all know and love. But the story's not over with this one. If you bring an alt and a dummy, you can put the dummy in a certain spot and put the alt in a certain spot, and you have exactly the same thing that you had previously.
Yeah, I've heard that there are a couple other ways to do this. So it seems like just an interesting. I mean, this is a good conversation to have, I think, right?
It is,
because the question here is like, the people are doing this because it is, like, it is more money per hour than the hardest bosses in the game by a good margin, right? Which is something, and people are finding ways to make it work, but the question is, should it be that much money, and is there a problem with the supply system for how these pouches come into the game then?
Yeah, and then from the other side of it, you can ask the question, these things are supposed to have a near instant death mechanic where they can kill you so quickly, maybe the entire environment needs to be redesigned in such a way that you shouldn't be able to do this in there at all.
True.
And that's the two different angles that you can take from this. And I know even within Clan Quest, there's been a good deal of speculation leading up to the patch note with knowing this was going to be fixed this week, just in terms of what might happen to the Ripper Demon prices. But to my knowledge, nothing has happened to the Ripper Demon familiar prices currently.
Oh, they doubled on Monday.
Oh, they did. Okay.
They went from 100k to over 200k a piece. They're currently sitting about 150 because people figured out the method. I mean, somewhat, but they're only because people have figured out other ways to cheese this. The uncheesed price on this is still a lot.
Tannis?
Yeah.
What should we do about this?
What do you think? I'm gonna lean towards here, Shane.
I want your opinion. You tell me what.
Buff Steel Titans.
That's one way of doing it.
Yeah, I don't believe in turning bugs into features. So, that being said, I think it needs to be corrected. With that, maybe, perhaps, there should be another way, or at least components. I don't know. Maybe another way for these pouches to get in the game.
It's a binding contract, and the very design of the binding contract says that you need to kill the creature to create the pouch.
Well, if you created two or three of them at a time and they were noted, potentially, right? Like, I mean, that still wouldn't fix the problem. You'd still have people cheesing this, but the idea is that you drive the price down some without flooding the economy with them. and just make it so that they're like the problem is that all Demon Slayer tasks after the binding contract update became ridiculous money. They're just everything is so good. Because essentially anything that gets used, like Gargoyles too, are actually really good money for the same reason. But like you have to they're just so much more money than other Slayer tasks. And so if you reset it so that the people that did them for Slayer got rewarded for killing them for Slayer, but not like rewarded for killing them off Slayer at like this level, it's just that it's so much money, right?
Right.
You're better off doing this than you are finding a team of people and just spamming Angel of Death or really challenging group content, which is crazy because wand and orb prices as a result of updates are also crazy right now.
Right.
Like, this is still better.
I would love, like, I like the idea of having it tied to Slayer, but...
But then the price would go up even further.
No, and I'm not arguing that you do it for Slayer.
I mean, I don't have a problem with that. Like, the idea behind the binding contract is you kill the demon and bind it. So, buying it is a workaround anyway. So, whatever. The problem is, though, how do you tie it with the archaeology? Because that's what brought in the contract.
Well, the money. I mean, and again, I think, like, I don't want to say that you don't get them off, like, you need to do them on Slayer task. My thing was more, like, the pouches should be cheaper. There should be less incentive for people to kill these.
Right.
There's too much incentive for people to kill them and to cheese it and to look for bugs for this right now. Because they're too expensive. Because
effectively, aside from a couple of familiars, this is the best in slot damage familiar. A couple of instances, rather, where you'd want to use something else.
Right. And those instances are like, well, it might be better. We're just not quite sure.
Yeah.
Looking at you next. And kind of nowhere else. Maybe Virago. So, yeah. Yeah.
And that's my general sentiment of what I've been doing is that if I'm not bringing a Yak, I'm bringing a Ripper Demon.
Oh, man. You know what the answer is? It hurts, guys.
Okay.
It hurts. It's non-tradable.
Maybe. I'm not
a pole. It's the overload.
It's the overload of summoning?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the problem is that you also require... I mean, actually, that requires 96 Slayer as well, which, let's be honest, Treasure Hunter exists. But, like, I mean... It's an option. I mean, that locks. Yeah, actually, I don't think there's any of the binding contract familiars that require an unreasonable Slayer level for the benefit they give you. It's actually a really interesting point.
Say that again.
So the other the ones that are used regularly, like the Blood Reavers, are another good example where like they're useful, but it's like niche, and you use them in some setups for like especially poison whittling things down. Or like gargoyles, right? Gargoyles are the big one because they're the best in slot for mining. But gargoyles require 76 Slayer, and 76 Slayer to have something that is slightly better than a Lava Titan seems reasonable to me.
Right.
Like, there's none of these that like it's a terrible idea to make them untradeable as a pouch because of the Slayer level that adds to the requirement for it.
And I wonder. I wonder what the breakdown on the kind of people that buy the Ripper Demon is.
So we should also clarify, too. The other problem with this is that they made a patch to try to fix this, and crazy that it hasn't. I mean, it drove down the problem with these originally was that they cost... I mean, before... They patched it so that the pouches turn into more scrolls, right?
Yep.
And that drove the price down from ridiculous, where it, like currently where it is actually sitting at GE value at the moment we're recording this, a little above 150, 180, something in that range. It drove that price down to like, you know, 80, 60, 70K for a while per pouch because you would just get more scrolls. Because the scrolls are how their pouches are actually getting used. They're not really just being used as familiars. They're being used for the scrolls, which do nutty damage.
Yeah.
And like you go through, you know, currently even like 15 pouches worth of scrolls in a solid hour of spamming summoning potions using Ripper Demons, right? So that's the people that would use them is that like those people would just need a ton of them. And everybody else is just like, yeah, I'll use one or two occasionally. But yeah, it's a really interesting question of economy where this best in slot thing gets consumed at massive rates.
Well, if you think about it, like back in the day, if you think about where the game was when Overload came out, people would have paid any price.
Oh, true.
You had to have it, right? If you were going to go do the top end content, it was a must have. You were going to pay whatever you needed to pay.
True. So it's still not that crazy.
It's not still currently happening with these.
That's the whole point, yeah. Right? Is that the people are paying currently massive money for them. And the problem is that is incentivizing people to find ways to which, I mean, maybe the ways shouldn't exist to begin with, right? Like the security through obscurity, bad argument. But, you know, I just feel like there's too much incentive right now to kill these. Like the reward is too great for the content, which is a hard argument to make to, you know, somebody's having fun with it.
They're not going to be doing that at the same rate either if it's untradeable. Because you're going to be setting yourself up, maybe. You know,
I mean, make a lot of people unhappy if they were untradeable.
Oh, no, I know. We'll probably get hate some people, mail.
No, some people would be.
It's not a bad idea.
Like the people like David, right, would just half their PVM life for every hour they spent.
Yeah.
EVMing, they'd spend, you know, five minutes killing Ripper humans. Yeah,
which is like, is that something you want to do?
I mean, if like there are a handful of people who can, again, like the methods to kill Ripper demons without multiple at a time, right? Like with a cannon, those kind of things, they're really challenging to pull off without dying. Like it is an incredibly high skill ceiling. That's like. You need either a lot of practice or a lot of PVM knowledge, and even then you're still dying a lot.
Yeah,
like it is a really challenging thing to do, and without that, like you're spending a lot of time collecting these pouches, even beyond actually running to create the contracts. Which, given those people are already doing this, right? Like, this is why this is so much money, because it takes a lot of time to accrue them in the volume that get used. So there's a supply demand issue. There's a bug issue. I don't know.
Yeah. So Tanis' solution is to make him untradeable. What's your position, Daxi?
I mean, it's a great question. I think that they just shouldn't be. The untradeable thing, I actually do like that a lot. I think that's a really good option to consider, just because, I mean, it does solve a lot of the problems. I mean, the core issue here is that I think they're too expensive. And it's not too expensive for what they give you. That's too expensive for what, like the time that gets put into making.
Yeah, I agree. Right? Like, I see what you mean.
It becomes too much of a chunk of the, like, if double the people did them and they were half the price because of it, like that is now just an incredibly large portion of the game, of the like game world and the players who just earn all of their money through Ripper demons. Like, there's just a huge population of people, and like they're used by a huge population of people, so maybe that's fair. My solution, probably the closest thing to this, would be like, I would just double down on the scrolls. Like, the problem is they're just being used too fast, right? There's too much demand for the supply for these, and it's driving the price to be silly.
So add more scrolls. I would just,
yeah, honestly, just drop it to 40 or 50. Make it ridiculous. Just, you know, double the number of scrolls you get per pouch. That would be, and I know it's a patch for the problem, maybe, but if you just need to find a balance there, right?
Where yeah.
They're worth money, they're worth the time. If you're doing them on Slayer, it's a great, nice little boost you get. But it's not like it currently is, where it is literally the best way to earn money in this game. It is not possible to beat that without like gambling or doing something else that is like either incredibly luck based or incredibly sketchy.
Yeah, and with that,
no more gambling.
And with that, that completely underscores why this is a problem. For me, I fall down on the side of fixing the environment just to make it so that it's not possible to do this. But we thought that would be fixed this week, but lo and behold, it was not.
I mean, if you made a perfectly round chamber,
yeah,
maybe.
Exactly.
Maybe.
Exactly. I
mean, which aesthetically pleasing, but it's what it is.
Yeah. All right.
Maybe. I mean, you'd still have the problem with the supply then, right? Like, then Ripper Demons just cost 400,000. Like, they just become prohibitively expensive to use, but so was the Grimoire, and the Grimoire was still used, so what do I know?
Yeah. And, I mean, I'd probably still use a Ripper. Everything being said,
I'd go back to Steel Titan with scrolls. If they were 400k per pouch and it was 20k per scroll, I mean, depends on the content, but for a lot of content, no, I'd stick with Steel Titan for that. For big group content, for speed kills, yeah, I'd break them out. It'd be the same thing as Grim for me. Like, big content, big group content, if I'm new to it, if I'm doing speed kills, if there's a specific strat, sure. Most of the time, get out of here.
All right. Boss tactics have been added to the Beast tab for the following bosses, including the Ambassador, Astalarn, the Blackstone Dragon, the Crassian Leviathan, Masuda the Ascended, Nex AOD, Raksha, the Rex Matriarch, Sanctum Guardian, Siryu, Solak, Terraket, and Varrak Lith.
That's What's not that overdue for? At all. It's not even overdue at all. What do you mean? What are you talking about? That's only like several years old. Yeah. It's not like we already have guides on how these things work everywhere. No. It's not like we figured it out to ourselves. It's not like 50,000 people. I mean, the Solak release was a lot of fun because 50,000 people died before he did. But like, or more, I can't remember. It was some ridiculous number.
Yeah. I'll just say that the Raksha one really makes it look a lot simpler than it actually is.
Surprise, all this happens at once. Yeah. We didn't tell you that, but it's the thing. Yeah, I mean, no. I mean,
I just got a chuckle out of that.
It's not the best guide in the world, but it's really good that they included them. It's definitely like, kudos, claps, hands, good job, but they've been coming soon for actually years.
Yeah.
And it's several paragraphs, I think, right? I mean, per boss.
I think the first of the Elite Dungeons, which is really where this begins, was, what, 2018, I think?
Did they come out before Solak?
I don't think so. Okay, Solak, then, is the oldest, probably. So
probably.
Yeah.
I mean, he's complicated, and they intentionally didn't. Yeah, I don't know, 2018, May. So.
All right.
Yeah. Around the same time.
Good news on the Dungeoneering front, the Fremenic Saga 3's company has been rebalanced to make it a more enjoyable experience. In particular, Owen, Ozan, and Ariane's health has been increased from 320 to 3200.
Anything to make it a more enjoyable experience, because those sagas were rough, especially the multi-person ones.
Yeah.
Well, I played through these, I think, 3 weeks ago on the alt. Because they were up in the quest list, and that particular saga, they used legacy damage numbers, so everything hit 10% as much and had but it also still used your normal HP bar because it sets your stats to whatever the stats are on the adventurer you're part of for a saga, and so my HP bar, my screen was constantly red because I had 300 HP out of 9,000 or whatever it was at the time.
Yeah.
So that was funny. Yeah. But also, you could heal through using regenerate, right? You could regenerate past your max life points. So you could get up to like 600 life points from these characters that had 320. I don't know if they fixed that. That was a little bit better because it removed some of the red from my screen.
The health overlay has been tweaked to fit this increase. Damage has been increased to around level 30 for all characters. Enemy health and damage values have been rebalanced to match these new numbers. Clicking doors will select the locks in front of them, similar to live dungeoneering. Heim crabs will now heal 200 instead of 20. Dusk eels will now heal 500 instead of 70. And multiple messages have been changed to info boxes to be more visible, including when Karn is immune at the start of the boss fight, when the behemoth is going to use the special attack, and when interacting with the rubble and the summoning obelisk. And some messages have been highlighted green to make them more visible, including your progress in the ice sliding room. Keys are now highlighted with a loot beam, and added a left-click option to the room where Owen and Ozan need to stand on the platform, so you can select who you want to stand there. Previously, this was hidden behind right-clicks. You know, I wonder if playing through this, if it would make it feel better, because I remember when I did these last year or so, they felt really old.
They're clunky.
Yeah, they are. So, I guess we'll take what we can get in that case, then.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like a good suite of changes. It sounds like they addressed a lot of the pain points that at least that saga had.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah.
When fighting the Bulwark Beast in Daemonheim, The Dungeoneering pickaxe's accuracy is now based on its tier. So a Novite pickaxe is 1%. It's level 1. Bathys has 10%. Fractite, 40%. And Primal, 99%. Correlates directly with your levels.
I wonder, because they didn't say, I wonder how that works. I mean, I wonder if that's specifically because people were trying to wield pickaxes and the pickaxes all have level 1 accuracy because that's how post-mining and smithing pickaxes work. But, I mean, the pickaxe on your tool belt will also chip through it if you're wielding a melee weapon. So, I don't know that that ever came up for me. Also, magic will bypass the shield. So, that's what I always use to kill it. But
interesting. I honestly had no idea about where this was going to fall. I just assumed this is a good thing in general.
I think it's fine, but I think it was a very niche case that it was an issue.
All right. But,
sure. I mean, the issue is there's if you don't have a melee weapon and if you only have a bow, right? If you are a person who has decided that you want to mono style dungeoneering, which I don't advise for the record, it was impossible to kill this boss. And there was a pickaxe in the rock in the corner of the room, but I believe that pickaxe is Novite anyways. So it's still tier 1. So I don't know that helps.
And does anybody actually use a primal pickaxe in dungeoneering?
I mean, I have one on my tool belt that I use when I use tool belts and pickaxes in dungeoneering. Right. I mean, there's no other way to wield one. So that I mean, I guess it must impact your melee accuracy when wielding a weapon because there's no other way to get a primal pickaxe before the boss in that dungeon. So,
all right, fair enough.
Okay.
All right. Now here's one where Tanis gets to get the violin out, I think. Added the following abilities to the unlocking expertise achievement: divert, greater chain, greater ricochet, greater concentrated blast, and magma tempest.
I don't even know what all that means.
Unlocking expertise is an achievement that you get for unlocking all of these abilities. These abilities, of course, as we all know, greater ricochet, very expensive, magma tempest, very expensive, greater concentrated blast in the hundreds of mils. Greater chain two, right after the changes that were made when Zuck came out. So as you can see here, this is kind of an interesting story because the total cost of unlocking this achievement now, if we're just going solely based on GE values, 3.7 bill, obviously higher because the magma tempest ability is being undervalued by the GE, so probably closer to 4.7, maybe even 5.
Now, and do you have did you include, because that achievement also includes greater barge, greater flurry, greater fury, and reprisal from Telos? That includes everything. I'm surprised it's that low. It's ridiculous.
And once again, this is based purely on GE values, so some of these are going to be higher.
And an achievement means what?
It's worth 75 rune score. That's what it gets you.
And when they added this week, people who had it unlocked previously had the achievement removed and got negative rune score. And there's where the ruffled feathers comes in.
What?
So, for the record, I don't think I've mentioned this on the podcast before. I know when I first came onto the podcast, I went through a bit of my history. For people that don't know, I am a trimmed completionist. I am in the top 1,000 ranked for rune score. So I have completely stopped hunting, and I haven't done any of the stuff for Elder God Wars Dungeon. I don't necessarily care anymore, which is fine. But, I went through my achievements today and saw, that's how I knew that they had added that one for the crocodiles, because I went through my achievements, I have an extra one that was unlocked, or that's available that wasn't there before. And so that's how I picked up that one for me. So this is an interesting one for me, because previously they have never taken away rune score because, again, high scores. They've always, when they've added content, when they've said this should be on the requirements list for this, and it's from the same reward interface as something else, they add it separately. So there's five achievements for Wars Retreat unlocks because they kept adding things to it. When the mining and smithing, when the artisan's workshop got the armor overrides added to it, those were a separate achievement with separate rune score. in this case, they are, and there's actually, I think there's already an achievement that's separate for ability unlocks, because there was another set of them, if I remember correctly. And so this one is interesting to me. Going back through, I actually also noticed that when the Hetz Oasis came out, they also removed two summoning skill achievements to make every green charm pouch and the meta achievement for having made all pouches. When they added the Holy Scarab, which, again, easy to fix, but obviously not several build to fix. But interesting that they seem to have changed their tune on removing rune score from people and how that affects... I thought it was a technical issue with the high scores, so maybe they fixed that?
Oh, no. Things have always been able to go negative on the high scores, or go down, rather. You'd be surprised how many times that actually happens, based on the data set that we've seen over all the years. But if you were hunting these still, how would you feel?
I mean, that one would be obnoxious for me. It actually doesn't have Magma Tempest, Greater Chain, or there's one other that's on there. I think there's three. I mean, I'd be a little annoyed. I mean, I've seen a couple of people in even our clan kind of who are also achievement hunters. We've got two or three of them, in addition to my old self, who just unlocked like Magma Tempest today. And like, I never use magic. I'm never going to use this. But rune score.
Yeah.
I mean, and if you're that level of completionist, you probably should have it. I think that's fine. I would have preferred that those get added in a separate file, because having Barge and whatchamacallit, Reprisal on there was enough expensive, but you know, yeah, it is what it is. I don't feel terrible about it one way or another. I don't think they're doing something terribly wrong, but they definitely changed their tune kind of without telling anybody that they were changing that.
You know, I think, honestly, each ability unlock should be worth a certain amount of rune score, and then they just all add up over time, and the meta achievement has no rune score associated with it.
Well, that's the thing, too, is that, like, that's the justification for a lot of the meta achievements having no rune score. Like, yeah. Master Quest Cape, Comp, like, all these things that can get taken away. Everything else, they had their rune score removed and added to something else. So, like, when they took it away from one of the quest meta achievements, I think, or mini quest or something, they added it into a new quest, and it was like, okay, when you get, like, those of you who have already completed this meta achievement will just not get rune score for this.
Yeah, and you know, to be 100%,
100%, Reaper's another one of those.
Right, and 100% honest with everybody here, the reason I feel that way isn't because I think the people who want to hunt all these should have an easier time. It's because it doesn't make sense when you're looking at the high scores from a data integrity object that you can have rune score and then lose rune score unless something really fishy is happening.
Right.
Well, that, and it's just not guilty. Community is not guilty.
No.
This time.
No,
of course.
I don't understand if they had done it the other way before, then why it did have to change. That just seems unnecessary.
Oh, no, this was never a meta achievement. It was always worth that 75 rune score, and you would lose it and get it back.
Well, right, so we lost rune score for it this week. I mean, either that or things are very glitched, which I don't think is the case. But, yeah. So anyways, I'm still not entirely sure how I feel about that, and it's not something that's going to be is it terribly impactful to anything beyond cosmetic numbers? No.
Because this isn't part of trimmed comp, is it, I don't think?
No.
No,
it's not. That would be very expensive.
Then we'd be having a different conversation about this.
We would be having a very different conversation.
So essentially, 75 rune score just got more expensive.
Yeah.
You can buy 75 rune score. It went up in price.
And I mean, Greater Chain, Greater Ricochet, and Magma Tempest are the most expensive ones on this list.
I think I bought Reprisal specifically for this rune score for however much it was a year or two ago, because it was, I mean, this is a huge, 75 rune score is a lot of, it is a lot of rune score. The comparable achievements are incredibly difficult. Other achievements worth 75 rune score are incredibly difficult things to pull off. That is very, like, end-game PVM feats. That's defeating a Raxor wearing only bronze armor and a bronze main hand. Like that's the level of 75 rune score, what that is. Allowing Telos to be fully enraged in all five phases, so above 100% enrage. Like, those kind of things are worth 75 rune score. So, you know, this is a big chunk, and kind of losing that after having thought that I'd unlocked it, yay, they're not going to take it away, like, doesn't feel great. But again...
No. Yeah. Pay to win seeps in every aspect of the game.
Oh,
now.
Don't give them any ideas on
that. Oh, no. If I could buy Magma Tempest for 10 bucks, I'd... No, I wouldn't do it. I don't use magic enough for that.
We don't want to talk about that. We don't want to talk about that. Let's move on now. Jesus, what side of the world have you been on, Tatis?
I'm on all sides.
Okay.
The top side.
Alvarok guards have been graphically updated.
Cool. They now, the Lumbridge guards look like the Lumbridge guard cosmetic overrides and from the Lumbridge cleanup stuff, and the Vera guards now do too. Good job, you got there. Proud of you. Do the Wizards Tower Wizards look like they're wearing Yak-Trak Back to Basics
I don't
stuff
think
too?
So.
Oh, that'll be next.
Do we read anything into this? Just like how the Archaeology Guild area got an update about 10 months before Archaeology came out?
No. I mean, if you're talking about them reworking Varrock, it's overdue, dog. We're here. Let's say it.
All
but, nah.
After gathering feedback, implemented a change that will allow the clue scrolls from the Scripture of Bic to go directly to your clue carrier. All right. I thought that could a resounding applause.
I mean, great, like, I don't do clues.
Yeah.
Great, resounding applause. That's RuneScore that Dexy does not have. I've done about 100 clues. That's it. out of the 1,000 you need for that score. So, you know, for people that have the book, the expensive book and the expensive pages and want to use them, this is great quality of life, and it makes the expensive pages maybe a little more worth using. So, big ups.
The mages in the Glacier Front will now talk to each other every 30 minutes, and with this, we were kind of hoping we'd have another entry of what we had in the Sentistan Cathedral, but as it is right now, it's not as earth-shaking as that, but I think there's a couple of interesting bits in at least one of the conversations, right?
Yeah. A couple of the conversations are you know, there's one with Karis that is entirely, like, lighthearted and joking, very RuneScape humor. There's one that gives a little bit more, like, context around Anakra, who's been very much painted as a villain.
Yeah.
You know, through pretty much everything. She's an enemy in the World Wakes, or a boss in the World Wakes. She's, you know, in all these things where she's like, ooh, Zemarak, but like evil, but only female Majorat, but like, They didn't paint her very well. So it gives her a little more humanity. And then there's the last one, which is the one between where Arian, Akthanikos, and Azanadra have a conversation about kind of. This is more, it leads on to the archaeology from the Sentistan dig site, where it's more of like what it was like to be in the city of Sentistan, and it's kind of this like, well, the city was, you know, it was a thriving place, but it was also like the class system was very pronounced, yep. Right? The tenements and the cultures versus the libraries of magic and the wonder workers, and you know, the backs of the poor were certainly trodden on, and it has a good discussion on that
and,
for folks that have had the time to go and look at it.
Ekthonikos, Zamorak was and is a populist rabble rouser with spurious answers to complex questions.
Mm-hmm. To this day, he exploits the weak
and that's precisely
with his lies.
And that's precisely what happened in Tablet of Het number 2. Or Eye of Het 2.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this is just more world building around that. And then going back to when the Fronts first came out, they said they wanted this entire area of Sentistan to feel like it was alive, because you start with, you know, a deserted area in the quest, but then afterwards you add into it, and we've been adding to it steadily since July of 2021, and this adds a little bit more to it with that. So it'll be interesting to see if they add more to this, but based on what this was said here, I think this is probably going to be a one-time thing, but we'll have to keep our eyes out on that.
The other thing to note from this, and I don't know if other people caught it, is that it makes note that Arianne might be a Zamorakian. I don't know if other people have read that into this, but it's she goes a long way to defend Zamorak.
Yeah.
And
kind Zamorak of only swung the staff.
Yeah, so I have no interest in your stagnant fallen empire. Your arrogance and short-sightedness killed Zaros. Zamorak only swung the staff.
But when you think
and
about it, that kind of makes sense.
And Nadrev respond.
Because where else would you lump Arianne?
No, but I mean, and that's why that is part of it's been noted elsewhere. I think that that's part of why she got kicked out of the Wizard's Tower is that she did not follow all of these Sarah Dominus teachings in her work. But
we never knew why.
It's interesting. It's interesting that they're bringing it back up and kind of doubling down on that aspect of things. That she is a character more of chaos, right? Arianne and Karos are two sides of a coin. Same side, potentially.
And you see that in Azanaj's quest, destroy the head statues and huff them in.
You're a bad girl.
But hey, I mean, it adds a little bit more. And it kind of, I think, if you wanted to read even more into it, and perhaps to an unhealthy level, it would show where we're headed next.
Maybe.
In terms of just reviving these old lines that... are so very RuneScape traditional. So
I can tell you for certain, we're heading towards chaos. Arianne is a seer.
Yeah, and then
we're going there. Then
obviously combine that with the other Sarah Dominus sides, and once the egg threat is resolved, it's easy to see where this naturally goes now. So,
yeah.
You know, I didn't anticipate to take much from this, but it sounds really interesting, and this might actually... be an important piece of dialogue going forward, thinking about it. So, sorry if I wrote that off at anyone out there. Well,
foreshadowing, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. All right. Next patch note. The dwarf multi-cannon upgrade kit is no longer referred to as a siege engine upgrade kit in drop broadcast, the adventurer's log, quick chat. Okay, good. Players are no longer being incorrectly told to pickpocket their target in stealing creation if they have no items to steal. And players are now able to pickpocket J-Mods in stealing creation. Which J-Mod, I wonder, wanted to play stealing creation on the J-Mod account?
Yeah.
Do you remember why that was taken away from to begin with, way back forever ago?
Oh!
They stole the item, right? Like the potato?
They stole the rotten potato. Somebody, on release day of Stealing Creation, somebody managed to pickpocket a rotten tomato from a J-Mod who was spectating a game for kicks and giggles. And,
that's hilarious.
They were able to use it as it's the server command item, right? Like, they were able to use it as such to activate the whole nine yards. So that was why that was taken away, and I imagine they must have fixed that, but I don't... I'm hoping they fixed it, otherwise...
Well, surely they have see that something come back that's not an notes. Item, right, anymore, that they have to carry around. That sounds, like, dinosaurish.
Rune code. But yeah, you're probably right. They've probably done away with the potato for the most part. Yeah. Still.
Amazing.
Interesting.
Calgarian demons
they put it in a patch.
Special attacks now correctly drag the player in and heal the demon in player owned Slayer dungeons.
It's good that they fixed it, but it makes me really sad.
Did you have these in your dungeon?
I have 5 of them in my dungeon.
Okay.
I killed 2,000 of them for demon title scrolls for trim comp back when I did that. And the fact that they didn't, because their specs, they have several different special attacks they use. All the special attacks hit you for pretty chonky damage and stun you. And so if you're killing them really fast, you don't have enough, you have to have the reflexes perk in order to have anti-stun up often enough. But they don't always stun at the same time, so that's really hard to use. So, you know, Jagex fixed it so they work now, which is good and great. And I kind of was hoping that it was a feature of the player-owned dungeon because it had been, by the time I was using it, it had, you know, been in place since the beginning of the dungeons. It had been years, or however long since Minifalls came out. So I was hopeful that it was maybe just a thing that was there. But yeah, no, they're much harder to soul split and AFK, quote unquote. Now, yeah.
All right. Dwarven Mine, when viewed at 200%, the Mine Resource Dungeon and Dungeon Link map elements are no longer overlap and are clearly visible. Good. When a spell is auto-selected when equipping a magic weapon, an info box will let you know to make it clearer that a spell has been set. If you'd like to stop magic spells from being auto-selected, a new option has been added, which can be found in Settings, Combat and Action Bar, Combat Mode, and Auto-Select Magic Spell. I didn't know it did this.
I am so incredibly glad that they fixed this. It was driving me a little up the wall, because I never knew when my spell was going to reset. There's several times in the game when I have wanted to use a Tier 1 spell, and the game has insisted on resetting me to a Tier 80 or 80 plus spell. Because I just don't want to do damage to a target, or, you know, for whatever reason, I'm just testing things out. I don't want to use a ton of runes.
Right.
The other thing is, if you're using, like, a tier 81, right, I have Virtus Wands, I'm leveling up my alt right now. They are tier 80. Any spell above tier 80 is useless on them, so surge spells have no purpose, and I only want to use, I believe it's wave spells that are tier 4, the fourth ground of them. So it costs me an extra runes because it would default to using a tier 81 spell when I only needed a tier 80 spell. And the cost in runes is frankly minuscule for the people that's going to impact. But it is nice that I no longer have to fight the game to fix it.
Yeah.
Or something that seems pretty
straightforward. This just feels like one of those weird things that's off in the corner that's going to affect some people like you, and you can now turn this off if you know what you're doing. So, font colors for achievement states, including locked, available, completed, and grace, have been updated to be more distinct from each other and easier for reading. When a free-to-play interacts with the ancient door to the Centistan, the dialogue box is correct. And yes, it says to the Centistan.
Yeah.
It's got a chuckle out of that. Christmas decorations in Prif and the Grand Exchange have now been removed. That was a nice to have them for a couple extra weeks, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'm always so torn, because it makes Prif so blue.
Yep.
And the ice terrain is real, but it really does look so pretty with the snow and everything, but I'm glad to have the grass back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Time.
Tanis, how do you feel about blue Prif at Christmas?
It's good for everybody else. I mean, I haven't spent a lot of time there lately. My time at Prif is max guild and
in and out.
Yep. Or lodestone, grab my acorns, hit the road.
All right, fair enough. On mobile, the bone crusher message won't appear if there's plenty of space in the player's backpack to hold all the dino bones. And swapping action bars no longer causes any issues. The buttons will now update appropriately. And there's the patch notes for the week. I think we can call that a patch week.
Oh, you can call that a patch week.
Yep. I think you can call that. Yep, we'll get out the hose. We'll start weeding.
Yep. And I mean, the patches were actually pretty good. I was worried that when we saw patch week, there'd be like a dozen of them at most, but this is actually a good list to go through. So I feel
fixed
okay
a bunch
right
of stuff. Fixed a bunch of stuff that probably needed it, that was fairly broken, or, you know, a little definitely not working as intended. So
yeah,
power to them. Fixed some stuff that needed it.
I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters for this week, and then we're going to talk about a RuneScape expansion into the board game market. But this week, I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L., Bryflex, Christian S., Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plonks, Diana, Drama Free, Dura Max, Hello Matey, Flaws of Man, Free Milk, Jacob R., Jason W., Jeebus, Jesse W., Keski Plays, Nate the Great, Nick G., Patty the Architect, Pernasius, Ratchy G., Renhawk, Ricky A., Samuel FL, Scott DS, Seth W., Singer, Stab Eve, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V, Zant, and Zazicon. Thank you, everybody, for your support. support. It truly does mean the world to us. And because of you guys, we are marching along. We've announced that our next monthly bit is going to be looking at skill rework, specifically through the lens of mining and smithing. So that's in production right now. We also have the round table that's happening this weekend, or will have happened by the time you guys are listening to this. And patrons will receive a recording of that posted to patreon.com/rsbnb. And we're going to have a couple of fun announcements there. So if you are a Patreon subscriber and you're listening to this on Friday, please do turn up to the round table. It's going to be a fun hour or so with lots of fun stuff to look at. Right, Tanis?
If you say so.
I do say so. And you can head on over to patreon.com/rsbnb. Sign up for as little as $1 a month. Gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits, including last month's on Dailyscape, and all of them going back now for more than 30 of them. So if that sounds fun, little as $1 a month. But we also do have a VIP tier where you'll receive a special VIP rank on Discord and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, plus high-quality stereo versions of the show. And for $5 a month, we'll be providing early access to all the clips that we use to make the clip show, which you have to wait till December otherwise to get. And, of course, get a shout-out each and every week on the show. And we have hit the $200 mark, and we'll be talking more about what that means on the roundtable this weekend. But now I guess that just means that we just got the long-term goal left, Tanis, of the Hot Ones Challenge at 500. Should we ever get there?
Ooh-wee. Yep.
And you're looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I can't wait.
We got to find ourselves some good friends to be there with us. Victims or friends, I say. But that's a topic for another day.
I just want one of those cheap Canadian EpiPens. I want you to send me one chain just in case this whole thing goes south.
I think you'll be fine. I don't think you need that. Fingers
crossed.
Unless you're feeling like you have some allergies you haven't told us about.
No allergies, but I could just imagine.
Inflammation.
Okay.
Uh-huh. I hear you.
Alrighty. Well, with that in mind, patreon.com/rsbnb if you want to get us there. But nonetheless, thanks so much, everybody, for making this possible. And I'm really looking forward to this roundtable and monthly bit that's on the way. Roundtable is at 9 p.m. game time on Saturday, if there's anybody listening to this before then. In that case, we'll see you there. If not, find it at patreon.com/rsbnb in the recording section. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Yeah.
RuneScape tabletop games. There's a survey out from Jagex is actually carrying out the survey, and it looks as though that they've licensed the IP to Steamforged Games to create both a board game and a tabletop RPG core book inspired by RuneScape's rich history and fantasy. Both games will be making their debut in 2022, with the board game launching on Kickstarter and the RPG book heading straight to stores. And with this, they put out the survey for this. So initially, board game or RPG, role-playing game book, which category do you guys fall into?
A little both for me.
Okay.
I still don't understand. Like, so... when I think
RPG,
board game, I think Monopoly. I think Sorry.
And then the RPG side of it would be so that you could create your own campaign and use planks from that book, in effect, to go on your own Gilenorian-based adventure.
And that's where the miniatures come in, right?
The miniatures would be for the board game, I think.
The miniatures would be like your players. That'd be like your, like for Monopoly, that'd be like the thimble and the car and the shoe. I think.
Okay. Well, that's one thing. I thought it was like something different.
Also, use them in your game for an RPG. But
yeah,
I mean, I think there could be some interesting. There are some interesting quest lines that could probably be kind of fun on a board game.
Yeah.
If I had friends that I could have played D&D with, I probably would have gotten into that.
And I honestly think a RuneScape-based D&D kind of thing would be really interesting.
We already have a fleshed out world.
I mean, I guess it could be... I don't know.
Cleric to Ceridomain, you could... Paladin of Zar, you could get some really interesting characters. You could
retcon the
characters.
Entire sixth age, because this is going to start at the edge of the fifth age only.
We know so much about all of the ages. You could set a campaign in second age. You know the name of a lot of the Zerotian cities. You know what the map looked like. 4 and 3 was green. You know, you could set yourself up to be a whole bunch of...
It could be cool. If you had a... Say, like, a Joe or a Therion for, like, the Dungeon Master guy. I could see how that might be fun. But, I mean, how many people are
out
there that
could make it? It takes a skill to DM and build a campaign, of which you're right. Therion does have that. Joe Dwarveniak would have that, Book of RS, yeah?
And that's what I'm saying, though. I mean, how many?
Yeah. But the idea is that the book that you get from this would provide you enough so that anybody who really wanted to put a bit of time to it could get going at it.
It would tell you the lore, it would give you the history, and then it would allow you, you don't need a DM that's, you don't need to have a campaign that is decidedly canon to RuneScape. You could say, here's this world, here's the starter pieces of it, and the job of a good
DM is
to...
You're
going to
latch on to this and this and this, and then take it from there,
right? You make the world your own. Respond to your players and say, you want to do this? This exists now, and it's...
I could catch on with clans. I could see this being played in chat, even. I could see it being like it would be the only. It'd be the only D&D game, right? What you could AFK the game that it's based off of.
Have you guys ever discussed scale theory as it relates to RuneScape? Has that ever come up before?
No. What is that?
Ooh, that's a really interesting. So I liked in my headcanon is that the entire game is built on scale theory, which is that. The scale of the universe is far too large to adequately display in a game.
Okay.
So, the Gyllenwaerd in my brain, Varrok is a city of tens of thousands of people, or just thousands of people, depending on the side of your world. Varrok and Falador are 3 days' journey apart instead of 3 minutes, right? The scale of things is appropriate for a game, but the world that it represents is much larger. And I think there's so much space in that scaled up world for you to create your own adventures with the monsters and the things that exist in the game.
It has been confirmed by Jagex that RuneScape operates under the scale theory assumption.
Right.
Okay.
And they say that in a lot of the quests, right? Like all of the residents of Santistan. I mean, Santistan is one of the better examples of the place is actually massive and has houses going out to the horizon. And that's only a section of the city, right?
Yeah.
But for the most part, you can count the number of inhabitants of Varrok on, several people's hands and feet. And that's just not true to the lore of the game.
Apparently it's been said, just speaking of the scale here, Falador, Garrok, and Santistan are capable of housing 80,000, 10,000, and 50,000 people, respectively.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems right.
Yeah, which... So, that's the universe that you're building into for RuneScape. I think if you operate under the assumption that you're in the lore side of the world rather than the game side of it, gives you a lot of options to be heroes that just aren't in the lore that we know. The RPG side of that is really interesting to me.
Yeah, and that's effectively what I boiled this down to. Board game, sit down, play once. The RPG, you're going in for an entire campaign kind of thing around some area that you want to build yourself.
Right.
Let's talk about some of the questions on the survey. Go ahead, Tanis.
Well, I don't know. The only thing that bothers me, it sounds so fun, but I mean, D&D always sounded
fun.
You
need a good DM to make it fun.
That's the only part.
And you need people who are going to play each and every week, and that's the reason I haven't made an effort on it is that I can't make that week to week commitment. So, the survey has lots of demographic information built in, lots of questions about how you game, where you get your information. The really interesting stuff is packed into the middle of it. So, talking about RuneScape and old school RuneScape, Which fifth age quest would you most like to see in a board game? Please list up to five. I had a field day with this one.
Yeah, me too.
I'll go.
Only one quest came to mind.
Yeah.
For me.
Oh.
Okay.
Which one?
One Small Favor. I could see that being a board game.
Yep.
So I mean, you could use that in like cards. Like you pull the card for one of the steps, and you need to create a bunch of steps in a row. You could do that you could do that so many ways and have it be good.
Yeah. Yeah. I will go first with mine. Number one was the Elemental Workshop series, obviously for the puzzles. Number two was Morning's End Part 2 for the light puzzle.
Can you imagine creating that in like three levels on like a board?
Oh. That's why I put that on there. You Are It, once again, for the puzzles and the treasure solving aspect. One Small Favor we've already talked about. And Underground Pass would be kind of RuneScape's version of Snakes and Ladders.
I like that one. Yeah.
Those are my five.
The other ones that I've thought of that are beyond that list, I think, like, Sliske's Endgame, the maze, I think the maze could be a really fun...
It has to
fun...
be fifth age only.
Okay. Well, maze. Or I mean, if fifth age, I guess there's Back to My Roots, is the jungle maze.
Oh, that's interesting.
Crenome Village. You could theme these things, right, to be a whole bunch of these. The other one that I really like, and credit to Darkest Night for this idea, is...
Clan Quester.
Broken Home. Because you can then have somebody playing as
good.
Playing as the monster. It's all like you've got the big map of the place, and you've got to go to all the places and collect the gems and like end up, and there's the safe room. It's like that on its own could just be a good board game without much of any change. Maybe get rid of the creepy basement, you know, but like I think that quest would be really good. Cause then you've got replayability in the, like, the monster has different, like, you can have a person who's playing as the monster. Like, I thought that was a really cool idea.
That's good. What about One Piercing Note? Because that was a murder mystery.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that could be, like, a version of Clue.
Who killed what where? Was it the Abbess? Was it the dancers outside? Was it... Oh, yeah.
That's another good one.
And then there could be, you know, based on how modern board games are, there could be parts of the board you go to where creepy music starts to play. Music.
I had one more, but I couldn't remember the name of it. But do you remember how, I think it was like around the fishing colony, maybe, that you went out on a boat and you hunted down a big...
The Thalassus.
Like, yeah.
You hunted the Thalassus.
It could be like a battleship type, you know, like hunting down the... Yeah. I couldn't think of the name of that quest.
Deadliest Catch.
Catch.
Yep. Oh, that would be a good one too. That hunting, because you could. I mean, the whole point of that was that it's the same board, but you go to different places on it, and you just use tiles or use tokens, something that you flip over to see if you're at the right place.
It all comes down to personal preference as well as to whether you prefer the more involved board games, or you prefer something simple like Deadliest Catch or a One Small Favor card game. Or an Underground Pass version of Snakes and Ladders, right?
I mean, this is people... We have a lot of RuneScape players with kids. And those kids would, you know, RuneScape Snakes and Ladders. You know?
Starting young,
Shane.
That's a good point. I don't know. I still like the idea of envisioning a 3D light puzzle that you have to complete with friends. Though that might just be me. And same thing on the Elemental Workshop side.
I'm just thinking of what a nightmare it would be to set it up, though. Like, it's bad enough to get Mousetrap not to, like, accidentally start when you bump it. You ever played a game with a kid, Shane? Yeah.
All right. Any other quests for board game?
I'm sure we could think of them, but that's a good list.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. It is. Alrighty, and now for the RPG. I said Elemental Workshop, Desert what treasure?
Shane, you troll.
Elemental
Workshop, isn't it? I mean...
Yeah, wouldn't you like to RPG that with people?
You turn the crank, the claw lowers.
And solve puzzles like that? I think that'd be fun.
Yeah, with a big old map, maybe.
Then what I realized I effectively painted out with the other four choices was just a ramp up to the sixth age. I specifically put down Desert Treasure, While Gothic Sleeps, Ritual of the Majrod, and World Wakes.
Temple at Sentistan.
Temple at Sentistan would be in there as well if I had another spot. So
my list for these was much less, because that would be a really good campaign. Although, having recently replayed Ritual of the Majrod, I feel like that quest doesn't have a whole lot going on. It's a lot of talking, and then you go and retrieve some stuff from the Frozen Fortress at Gorok, and then you fight a bunch of things. The actual mechanics of that quest are not a whole bunch of, go this place,
but
do this
lore
thing.
Ramifications are interesting, and lore what you could use for it.
Yeah.
The first thing that came to mind was Plague's End. I think that would be that would just be a lot of fun. But the other one might surprise you, Shane. For the RPG side, I think Dishonor Amongst Thieves would be
build your team and then do the puzzles.
But once again,
Siska's Fortress.
I'm going to highlight this Fifth Age. They want Fifth Age only. So
the one that I was thinking for this was Demon Slayer. Finding the sword and doing, maybe not modern as much version of it, but exploring the city of Varrok and finding the keys to access the sword case to unlock the sword is a good puzzles plus plays plus running around.
And honestly, that's something the DM could send the group on. Just start at the very beginning and you don't realize you're on Demon Slayer till the end.
What about Defender of Varrok, right? That's where you go up and you infiltrate the Majrod.
Mm-hmm. Zamorgul's Fortress?
Zamorgul's Fortress. Yeah, Defender of Varrok. That has the city, it's got the tunnels, it's got bosses, it's got...
And the Curse of Arav, that could also just be the Varrok questline be a good...
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, any of the questlines are just the vampire questline where you're actually an adventuring party going into
that would be
being taken to Burg Darrah and joining with the
temple trekking.
I mean, temple trekking is a great encounter set. I don't, use your skills. It's great rolls to would be a pretty good setup. It's nice. It's planker, like you're saying.
Oh, what is that slum place? The Maravich or the city of...
Mireditch? Oh, yeah. Dude, that would be an interesting board game. Can you imagine a Mireditch, the agility course, finding a way
that would be. It would probably be funner than actually doing it in RS.
That's what I'll put instead of Sliske's endgame, is the Mireditch. Going through Mireditch. It's a little more gloomy, but... I mean, they're both gloomy. I suppose it still works. Or Tyranoan, maybe. But yeah, Roving Elves. Plague's End would be a really... I'm actually really into the Plague's End, because that's... You're going to all the different places to find the clan leaders, too. That would be really cool.
Well, basically what I'm getting from this is that they just need to make the book for a starting endpoint, and then people can just jump off and go and do whatever they want with that. And I mean, anybody who is up on the lore today could do this second bit that we're talking about right here, the D&D based campaign, the RPG. Anybody who was up on the lore could run something like that now.
Well, yeah. I mean, look at just some of the people in your clan.
Oh, Shane. Yeah.
They could go to freaking town with this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the question is, at that point, would you get clan questers to play, or would you extend it outward to non-questers?
I think the people you choose to be at your D&D game is a very personal question, because
you got to spend hours with them. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's also a lot of trust to put in people to not to be invested and to show up and to not just be, maybe not just be there to mess around, right? There's places for those campaigns, but you have to have that conversation in advance, and the people you select kind of need to be on the same page. And you need people that are willing to do that too, right? Yeah,
that's true.
But if anybody's starting a game like this, please let me know. I would love to be part of an RPG in setting Gelinar. I would be over the moon. Or any of the... Even, like... You could have some good things just, like... Because we don't know a lot about Tardiad or Abana. Or, like, you could just create your whole world.
That's an expansion
world.
Pack, okay?
Yo! Yo! Perfect.
So that's how we get Rite of Passage.
Hey, there we go.
Oh.
So that's how we finish the gnome quest line.
Oh.
Make it yourself, boys. We're not going to do it for you. I'm not bitter. Anyways.
But yeah, I mean, I think we got to share this with Clan Quest and see if anybody wants to do this. But it's a huge ask, obviously. And I mean, even if we were just to check in every so often and report on what was happening, I think it'd be an interesting thing to watch with this too. So, all right. What characters would you like to have in a board game?
The signature heroes are such easy answers.
Yeah,
and we already talked about Ariane today,
right? And I thought, you know, I could list the signature heroes, but I'm not going to do that.
I did list one.
Okay.
Ozan is hilarious.
Fair enough.
I love Ozan. I could see him on a board game.
Karos. Karos for me was the immediate to my brain.
He's on there for me as well, as is the wise old man.
Oh, Wom. The Wom is such a character. Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
I also threw in Sliske, Sir Tiffy, and Guthix.
Yeah. See, I had Guthix, Saros, and Guthix, Saros. Raptor.
The Raptor?
Ooh, yeah. We need to learn more about him.
And these can be friendly or enemy, I should add.
Oh, that was right. The King Block Dragon. That was the...
Okay.
Oh, good classic. Yeah. Because the other thing, too, is that we love talking about these, but these board games, I think, are going to be aimed at both... The reason they asked for Fifth Age is they're aiming them at both Old School and RS3 players, right? So we love our signature heroes, but the Old School players are like, who?
Yeah.
Are you? What? Yeah. Who?
For the tabletop role-playing game, my characters I wrote in were kind of the same. Guthix, Charos, the Majorat, just as an entire group. Bob and the Wise Old Man. Yeah.
I'd almost rather not have any gods.
That's a good point.
Just from a power, like I want gods to be like, because in a lot of those games, they're creatures that you worship and get powers from, and like epic tier con. Like I guess that's true. If you wanted to just have a level 20 D&D campaign, then you would want those characters to have more fleshed out, you know, information on books. So maybe.
But, yeah.
Hmm.
All right. Characters. Next up was about which of the areas of the Fifth Age lore do you want to know more about? And I feel
I really
like we could discuss this forever here, so let's just be quick with this. Tanis?
Gnomes? Like, I wanted the gnomes finished, that's the only... But, like, I guess that's all I really could think of. Like, is this just dropped lore lines? Or, like...
Yeah.
You know, yeah, so, I mean, the gnomes is really the only thing.
Yeah, they've fleshed out almost everything else.
Yeah.
I kind of feel bad now for putting the Majorat, the Myrek, and Reldo / Charos, though we have learned a bit about them recently.
I mean...
But I feel like there's more.
My interest for all of that kind of thing would be the scale theory aspect of it, right? Like, we know the lore, the big pieces. I mean, I would love to know a lot more of the what it's like to live in blank, right? Like, the things that they would need to flesh out for those books would be, you know, what the feel of the arty market actually is, right? Because our feel of it is, I steal from stalls. But are there a bunch of nobles walking through? Are there, like, you know, is that a gentrified place? Varric is definitely built out in the game to be a slummy kind of town. There's these gangs everywhere, all, like, outside of even the, like, low-income, quote-unquote, area that's down in that southeast there. You know, I would love to know more about the feel of the cities.
Yeah, and, you know, you're right, that is something that would definitely have to be done about, so I think mentioning that is good.
Lumbridge, a small town anywhere.
It's next to the bridge over the River Lum.
There you go. Board games use miniature figures to represent player characters. What gear should a starter miniature character wear? And I felt this was a very simple answer. You can correct me if I'm wrong on this. Bronze with a wooden shield.
Oh, the wooden shield. Yeah.
I just didn't have any answers for this. I'm like, you know, I just wouldn't matter to me.
Oh, and the wooden shield is such a, like, maybe this isn't something that you guys would recognize, but it's a very iconic PVM symbol. That the wooden shield is a teaching kind of a symbol for a lot of players. It's the, like, you know, it's wooden shield and some kind of a pointy hat. Is the, like, high-tier PVMer, you know, E-date getup. So, I would love a wooden shield. Shield and a bronze butter knife.
Yep. as for the high-level character, I think you have to go iconic for that. So I went for the original dragon setup of the dragon helmet, dragon longsword, dragon square, plate body legs with the legend's cape.
I want Cybrissus. Cybrissus' outfit? Give me RMs with a dragon med and a whip.
Okay.
Something classic.
How about you, Tanis?
Probably dragon ornament.
Okay.
I'll put a one in plus one in for Bandos, because I think that's something that shared old school and RS3 as well. That's,
yeah, very iconic.
You know, your high tier, especially for old school.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
That's your best in slot.
How important are miniature figures to you? And this is, I guess, gauging if they actually have to make them. I wrote not important at all.
Yeah, me neither.
Little importance. It'd be cool to have, but they would only get used as game pieces. You could equally just make game pieces that are generic fantasy man, cutout, whatever.
Yeah. And which characters would you like to see represented in miniature form?
Talked about that.
No, there's a different question at the end here.
Oh.
Those ones were ones to appear in the campaign or the game, but the actual miniatures itself that you'd like?
Oh.
I wrote the Wise Old Man, Charos, Bob, Hans, and Brassica Prime.
Cabbage superiority.
You open this game set up and you get a cabbage, right? Not going to raise any questions.
Not for clan questers.
No. How about you guys?
It's a fun list.
Yeah,
I'd want the same ones I talked about above, frankly. I use them for my RPGs, that's it. Yeah. Maybe some monsters. Actually, I take that back. Having some monster miniatures to use for a D&D game, if you were to like live stream or in person have a map set up, it would be nice to have, like if your quest was one piercing note, right? It would be great to have a Ripper Demon as a mini.
Yeah.
Speaking of Ripper Demons early, right? Those kind of things. Demon, Delrith.
Yeah, so basically theme it around to whatever the quest or area is. Okay. Yeah, I think that's fairly obvious.
The only thing that came to mind for this, and I don't even know why, but it was Max. I'm like...
Ooh, interesting.
That asshole. Have you talked to Ellen Antirth about him? Apparently he's a bit of a elitist chump. But anyways...
Well, I think we have enjoyed that since we just spent about 25 minutes discussing a potential RuneScape tabletop game and D&D game that still might not come to pass at some point in the future, though hopefully it will, given the fact that they're doing a survey about it and they have licensed it out, so fingers crossed.
Hey, you guys hyped me up. I wasn't putting very much into that. I thought, now it actually sounds like it might be fun.
Right?
Yeah.
This is going to be Clan Quest calling at some point, I think.
Maybe.
So.
Fun game nights, either way.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Before we wrap up, we'd have a question from Questcaping, who says, this week's patch saw the addition of overhead dialogue to the Glacier Front, the second place it's been used within the Elder God Wars dungeon. Is there anywhere else in game you'd like to have overhead dialogue added to the NPCs present?
Have you listened to the conversation between the werewolf and the human guard underneath the temple at Paterdomus?
No, I have not.
I don't remember when that was added, and I don't even know if they told us they added it. I think maybe with River of Blood. But there's a werewolf and human guard who have this great back and forth conversation. That's just two buds who are chilling that are down there. That comes to mind for this. Where else? Who else do I want to hear chatting with each other? Honestly, like the bankers at the Grand Exchange could be fun.
Yeah, that would be fun. I feel like that there, and this might have passed. I feel like there could have been a place that could have designed this in Prift to have the elven clan heads talking to each other.
Mm-hmm. Up in the Tower of Voices.
Yeah, something like that.
Occasionally. Or
maybe every other Sunday they gather and have a conversation.
Yeah. Or even just when their clans are on Voice of Saren, the leader shows up there and has, you know, they've got individual dialogue between them.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
A lot of combinations.
And that'd be relatively simple to do, I'd imagine.
Well, I think it would be a lot of dialogue. There's a lot of different combinations of them.
But, once it's written. But
yeah. Implementing it would be fairly straightforward. That's just bottle.
I think that's what I'm going to go with. But I agree. And yeah, like we said, we were able to actually glean a little bit from that discussion that was happening on the Glacier front. So I think that's a good way to keep things going. Mm-hmm. You know, one area. Go ahead.
Where else is there a large concentration of like named and important NPCs? Well, because the other example of this is Posty Pete, right? Posty Pete shows up a bunch of places and has overlord dialogue with all the Petes. He has it with Karos or Relda, whichever you're feeling at the time. He has it with a whole bunch of people. I'm trying to remember who, like, think of who else would be, like, you know, where is there's a concentration of people that would have those conversations? Because there's, like, the Council of Saren was a whole 9 yards.
Yeah, we could have benefited. We could have benefited with that when that was being talked about. Another area I feel really could have benefited when it was being built out was Anachronia, when we were, you know, still wondering what this area was going to be used for in the first few months after it was added.
The base camp, yeah. Even more to talking to Giles and the folks up the top there, maybe, yeah.
Because you remember how they dropped Anachronia and it felt like, okay, we got an agility course and some slayer creatures, but that's it right now.
Hunter.
And big game hunter. Too, right? And it really didn't take on a life of its own and feel complete until the Ranch Out of Time got there and Orth and Dixite did.
True. So, yeah. And I mean, now it's hunter mecca because of all of the Jodinkos. People have realized those are really good with the hunter changes.
So. Oh, that's my option. How about you, Tanis?
You know, it's not something that I notice a lot. And if I do notice it, then it actually is more of a distraction to me because I'm like, oh, that must have been important.
Right.
So now I'm trying to hunt down the chat.
And then you got to look through the chat box and scroll up. And the wiki does a really good job at transcribing all those. We just got to give them a huge shout out.
Anytime I see that.
Making all those transcriptions available, because without them, we wouldn't have been able to have the discussions we did on the podcast, honestly.
Yeah. Anytime you want to see those, and I just go to the wiki. I don't try to wait a bunch of time to see if they pop up again.
Yeah.
Like the conversation between those guards, it's on the wiki. Quest dialogue options, race, the whole nine. Yep.
Yeah, there's some good answers, and I think in general, the thing to just take away from all this is that rather than just treating these as one-time things, maybe this will become a recurring phenomenon with new content that's added. I think that'd be the best thing to take away from this for lore and story advancement. So, alrighty. You ready for picks of the week?
I'm ready.
Okay. I'm going to go first. Thanks. Do you have a pick of the week?
No, not this week.
I have one, and I figured I'd share this right now, just in case there's anybody out there who's looking for a quick and dirty photo editor that doesn't necessarily have one or want to use an application. on their computer. It's a website called edit.photo, and the way it works is that you're actually able to take whatever is in your clipboard or upload a picture, and with that it will load it into this photo editor, and with that you're able to crop it down, you're able to add some filter style adjustments to it, like if you wanted to make it more warm, you wanted to make it pastel-y, or even just make it 100% black and white, you could do that. And then you can make all sorts of other adjustments like brightness, contrast, all the usual photo things. And it's topped off by adding annotations, both in terms of being able to just draw freehanded or being able to place shapes or text on the picture. And then at the end of it, after you're all said and done, you can just click export and it will download the image directly to your computer as either a PNG, JPEG, or WebP image. And it's just a fun little example showing how far our web browsers have become with this. And it's 100% free to use. It doesn't use any cookies. There's no pop-ups, no account required, no advertisements, and no tracking. And they make this very, very clear on their website with that, because that's something that a lot of people, in effect, try and prevent from happening on their modern web browsers. So I don't know what the case would be to use this, maybe a Chromebook if you didn't have an image editor that you want, or maybe a computer that you can't install things on. But nonetheless, just a fun little image editor if you ever need to crop something out or annotate something quickly, or even... they have a redact option if you wanted to make it so certain things aren't visible. You just are able to do that as well. But once again, this can be found at edit.photo. And that's a big thing, like a free, fun little website that allows you to image edit.
There are also those of us who are not of the tech-savvy variety for whom crop screen, add thing, press button to do thing. Good.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I'm sure there are programs on my computer and places that do that, but I don't know where they are.
Exactly. Like, I think the thing to use on Windows is, and Windows users can tell me if I'm wrong, is MS Paint. Windows users can tell me
that's
if I'm wrong.
That's what I used.
Mac OS is obviously Preview, but lots of people in this day and age just don't want to leave their web browser. And this actually has a very, very nice and easy to use UI with it. So, apparently, you can even drag and drop images to it as well, directly into your browser, which is really
to edit. This is to edit dirty photos.
No. Edit.
You redact the nipples.
Oh. Edit any picture you want.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yes, correct.
Tanis, what's your pick of the week?
My pick of the week this week is the Wheel of Time series that is on Amazon Prime. There are books, and I don't know if those are better. I assume they probably are. I don't know. But I don't feel like it got the... It didn't get the rushed treatment, maybe... maybe a little bit, but not quite as much as some other fantasy series out there. It's really interesting. It's really good. I found it like it was fascinating to see this world that was so like matriarchal, you know, in a way, like how the women had the ultimate kind of power. It's kind of neat. But yeah, I mean that's my pick of the week. You can get it in book form, but I watched the Amazon Prime series. It's only the first season, but it's pretty good.
All right.
So a lot of magic and stuff like that.
And based on this is your third show, you've been watching a lot of TV recently over Christmas then.
You know, more than I used to. I've just kind of like I blame mining and smithing, because I'm just so comfy and just like the AFK and and play my RuneScape like that, and I've been watching a lot more shows. A lot more shows, and we'll have more picks next week.
So you got an entire run going on 4 weeks now.
I do, and that doesn't even include this wonderful Star Trek series I've been watching lately. One gave credit for.
Wow, it's so I will be underrated. Floored if you use Enterprise's pick of the week at some point.
It's better than it's given credit for, Shane.
All right, we'll save that discussion for if and when that happens. You tell me if we got to get Earth back on the show for that week. To have that.
Okay.
And if we do that, you're not allowed to tell him it's pick of the week until the end.
Oh, with pleasure. With pleasure. That makes it better.
All right, let's start us off with some achievements, Thaxi.
Will do. Congratulations this week to Atmot Hua on 99 attack on January 6th. January 26th. Also on January 26th, we had Skips with 120 archaeology, Thieves with 200 million ranging experience, Zazakon with 120 dungeoneering, and on the 25th, we had Skips with 120 invention. Man, just cleaning up those 120s. And Uberplastic with 99 archaeology.
Well done, well done. Picking up on the 24th, we have Ada Darkmoor with 99 attack, Darkest Night with 99 divination, XOX Scotty XOX with 120 archaeology, and X Polonia with 99 defense, rounding out the 24th. Then on the 23rd, we have Azahidia with 99 ranged, Donna with 99 agility, and Up the Irons 05 with 120. Farming. Well done.
All right, very nice. And then on the 21st, we had Atmohua with 99 ranged. We have Azahadia with 99 agility. We have Questar Shit with 120 runecrafting. Our very own Tycho Elf with 120 archaeology, and that was on the 20th. And then Uberplastic with 99 invention, Explorinia with 99 thieving,
and that's a wrap for achievements.
That's a wrap. Yeah, nice job, everybody.
Nice job. It always makes me laugh when the name Questar Shit comes up. And we were talking about this in pre-show, a little bit of a teaser here, or background information. He actually joined Clan Quest on April 1st of 2020, and Earth recruited him, and there was a big discussion within our guild council at the time if Earth was just trolling us because it was April Fool's Day, and he had to make it very clear that this was not a joke. Someone named Questar Shit has joined Clan Quest.
I hear he's working on his Master Quest cape. That'll be a good time.
Yeah, it will. All right, what are we up to, Tanis?
Oh, I finished smithing all of my Elder Rune bars, but that wasn't enough for me, and I went right back out and started mining some more. I don't know where it's going to end.
200 mil.
I'm just happy right now, so...
200 mil.
Well, yeah, I guess it will end there. But I mean, I am aiming for 120 mining. So I didn't think I would hold on to this, but yeah, I might just go all the way through.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it. You know, like it didn't seem like it would be something I would really get into, but it's just zen. I like it.
And that's the thing that always comes up in my mind is that do I go for 120s and skills I really like, or do I wait till if and when they actually get taken to 120 by Jagex so I can train that way with the new training methods, which are almost undoubtedly going to offer better XP rates.
Right.
And that's always an internal question I have in my head as I'm looking at my skill list. So I think we know
it's
where
the journey, Shane. You'll remember
that's
the grind.
That's right.
Or you'll remember the show you watched You'll remember the show you watched during the grind.
Right.
That's right.
All right. Anything else, Tannis?
Nope, that's been about it.
All right, Daxi, what have you been up to?
I have been doing a lot of raids because I know who I am. And finishing off the tail end of my quest cape on my alt. I have 9 quests left. I finished Sliske's endgame today. And I'm going through all the quests in more or less timeline order. So we're getting near the end of the list.
That's such an adventure that I would like to do at some point.
It's taken a couple of months, but it's been a good time.
Nice. Nice. Anything else?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's going to be really fun to see that second quest cape of yours. So keep it up.
Yeah.
Keep it up. As for me, I guess I can bring this forward now to the RSBNB update community. It turns out that one of my goals in 2022 is going to be to get the completionist cape, in that I have less than a dozen things left to do for it.
We're gonna
you can
happen.
Do it.
And the vast majority of them have all happened organically.
There's a couple on there that are 5 minutes. I don't think you've gone to see Klaus yet.
No, so. I have not.
There, no, where that 12 list is really more like 6 or 8.
Yeah, the biggest ones are 120 Dungeoneering, 120 Slayer, the Dominion Tower, yes, and Bones to Peaches, I think.
We'll get you all those. You'll be done by bonus, by DXP.
Yeah, that's generally what I'm aiming for, double XP around that time. Aside from that, my newfound interest in PVM has continued into the new year. And on the alt, mainly at this point, until double XP comes around, daily farming runs with that too. So focused a lot around the PVM side on the main account, but that comp list, I looked at it on New Year's Eve and it was about 22-ish, 25 items, somewhere in that range. And since then, I've just been gradually whittling them down because, you know, none of them were actually that bad out there, minus, you know, the Dominion Tower one that was going to be going on that. So I'm like, geez, I'm that close. Okay, we're going to get this done this year. So
we'll get you Dominion Tower by the end of this weekend. We got this.
Okay.
It'll be fine.
All right.
It'll be fine. Maybe I'm misremembering how long it took to get these done.
I have 14 boss kills in Dominion Tower currently.
I have 0.
Okay.
Dominion
Tower is a little bit rough.
I also have to kill, another one for the Qadarn title, 1,000 elves.
Yeah.
That's easy.
Well, you also need to do Slayer, so those two should go nicely hand in hand.
And I do have a stack of dummies with that, so we'll see how all that goes on double XP. But that's what I've been up to. I don't know that there's anything else that we have to mention, of course. I mentioned the round table. If you are a Patreon member and you are going to be around on Saturday, definitely do try to turn up for that one. We're going to have a couple of fun announcements on that. It's 9 p.m. game time Saturday if you're listening to this before then. But if not, we'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Please do be sure to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast listener out there. We're on Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google, Amazon, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, and more. And of course, YouTube as well. You can find us at youtube.com/RSBNB. Please do give us a like and subscribe there. It helps the channel out a lot. And with that being said, we'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. See you then, everyone. Take care.
See ya.
Ciao.